This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thanks for tuning in, Mike. Max, afternoon ride home, and we got a lot to talk about. A bit later, we'll visit with a man who's been the general manager of the Ramsey County Fair for 51 years. Ron Scherer will check in to tell us how not to catch fish. He's had quite a summer doing just that and much more. Some frivolity and the serious side. Lori Swanson is the Attorney General, of course, for the state of Minnesota. And Lori, you have been one busy lady lately. How are you doing?
I'm well, Mike. How are you doing?
Good. It's good to talk to you.
You too. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Now, I want to start with the most recent, and then from there I want to work through how you get your information and how you rely on the public and what we can and can't do to help you with these causes. But one of the largest healthcare fraud cases in American history, had 10 Minnesotans involved in it, of course, and it was busted by one person coming forward. First, set the stage for exactly what happened and how this matriculated your desk.
Yeah, absolutely. So this week was National Healthcare Fraud Takedown Week, and in connection with that, working with the federal government, our office brought charges against 10 separate individuals, which collectively deceived the medical assistance program of over $8.5 million. What happened is somebody made a tip initially to the Minnesota Department of Human Services saying that they thought a recipient wasn't receiving care. Ultimately, the Department of Human Services sent what seemed to be a pretty small file over to our office involving about $30,000, and our lawyers got involved and served about 40 search warrants and obtained over a million different files. A file could be one pages, it could be thousands of pages, and drilled into this situation and uncovered just a very widespread scheme in which several companies and individuals with those companies ripped off the medical assistance program to the tune of $8.5 million, charging the program for care that shouldn't have been billed, that wasn't provided, in some cases paying kickbacks to the recipients to get them to cooperate and not blow the whistle on the fact that care wasn't being provided, and really just shocking cases and disturbing cases. I mean, medical assistance is funded by state and federal taxpayers to take care of low-income Minnesotans who are sick, and that can range from, you know, really ill kids to grandparents. And, you know, the public policy of Minnesota has been to encourage people to be able to get health care in their homes, because that way senior citizens can stay out of nursing homes where it's even more expensive. Kids can get treatment where their parents are. But in this case, these people conned the system and ended up ripping off taxpayers and, you know, even billing for some cases when people were in prison and couldn't be getting care.
Yeah, I mean, it just sickens you when you read through this whole thing. But take me back to, okay, so somebody says something's amiss here. I think there's something wrong. How do we as the public know what our first phone call should be? Because I don't know if I'd call the company that I thought was supposed to provide the services, and does that in essence then shed light on something that that they can take care of? Or how do I know who to go to first, I guess, is what I'm saying, when I think something isn't right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a couple things. You know, spot checking the care that's going on to make sure that the people are present when they're supposed to be present is a good idea. And so if, let's say you have grandma or mom is being taken care of at home by a home health care worker, calling up periodically to see, is the worker in the house? Are they actually there when they're supposed to be there?
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a good idea. You know, it's you can review what's being billed under your name. So whether somebody's on medical assistance or whether they have private insurance, you can ask to see copies of those billing records, either from the government if it's public or from the insurance company if it's private, to see what's being billed and then try to match that up against what care is actually being delivered. You know, if they're billing 8 hours a day when they're maybe there 1 hour a day, obviously that's a problem.
Sure.
And then, you know, I think as well, being really careful if you're asked to sort of pre-sign documents. I mean, a lot of these schemes work because people are told, here, just, you know, sign these timesheets, you know, sign these blank documents. And that's always a red flag if somebody in the healthcare setting asks you to sign something that hasn't been completed or filled out.
How about, I always think about when you think you might see a scam in whatever it is, if you call the Better Business Bureau, Do they forward you information? Do you work with them? How do you know which branch to go to?
Yeah, we do. I mean, people can always call our office and the Attorney General's office. We're kind of a one-stop shopping center. We have a toll-free number, a local number. We answer at 8 to 5, and we have trained specialists who can take calls. And if it's not within our wheelhouse, we help work with the person to get them to the right agency or the right resource, because it really is hard to know exactly who to report things to. And so we play that role for people, and I would encourage people to call. We get hundreds of calls a day, and it's how we know how to do our job. So even if you're not sure where to go, if you want to call my office, we'll help work with you to get you into the right hands if it's not us.
Where do your tips come from, the consumer, or is it somebody inside a company usually?
You know, it's both. We hear both from people inside companies, nurses or other care providers who smell that something's wrong and they want to do the right thing. But we also hear from members of the public, even bystanders or neighbors who, you know, get worried that somebody's not getting the appropriate care, and, you know, they'll raise it and sort of let us know about things. So it's all of the above. And this is a perfect example of why it makes sense to call. You know, just that one simple tip, starting with a pretty small claim, turning into an $8.5 million ripoff of the taxpayers. So,
and, you know, just, it scares me to think that at this very moment there could be another $8.5 million thing out there that we don't know about yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where the phone calls really, really do come in, because these people who are doing these kind of schemes go to great lengths to cover up their involvement. In one of the cases, we did a search warrant on a lady's house down in Arkansas, and, you know, she barricaded herself inside for 45 minutes, we think shredding records and getting rid of the records. And, I mean, they were using throwaway cell phones and, you know, fake identities to try to...
They were as far ahead of it as they could be, huh?
They were. And that's where, you know, somebody doing the right thing and making that phone call can be just invaluable, Mike.
You know, CenturyLink was the headlines. It seems like old news already now. But I want to commend you for that, because in a different way, I just had a nightmare experience with them last year, trying to get to the bottom of why I wasn't getting service for the internet that I was paying for. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being 15 phone calls and 55 minutes on hold. And I went to their office twice off of 394, and I got a phone number that didn't exist, to another one. It wasn't something that I would say that... The debate was why I couldn't get the service. But throughout that process, I realized that I was talking to people in South America on their 800 number, or Kansas or wherever, and it just didn't feel right. I thought, man, systematically there is something wrong here, which – and it wouldn't have been the kind of thing that I called your office on. But to see this, when I saw it, I said, it doesn't surprise me, because it looked to me like that's the way they were doing business. Is there a gut feel kind of thing, or things you can call attention to that way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's how this one got on our radar, CenturyLink, as well, as through consumer complaints. We had hundreds of complaints from people who said the company quoted us one price, but then the bill came through and they charged another. And then they also said when they called the company to complain that there was a misquote given, the company wouldn't fix it. It would be month after month after
yep.
month, just like you, phone call after phone call after phone call. And this refusal to fix it, you know, tells me a lot, right? It's any business can make a mistake. But when you get hundreds of those situations and they won't fix it even when brought to their attention, that's rises it to a whole new level. And we had one fellow who, is participating in the case, and he's a engineer, and said, you know, he complained because he said, you know, I figured my mother wouldn't, and my uncle probably wouldn't, and maybe my brother wouldn't, or my neighbor wouldn't, but that, you know, it's complaints and people coming forward then that, you know, can hopefully change these practices.
And that's why it's important if somebody even thinks they have a small complaint, because it may be another layer to what they're already seeing, right? I mean, what you saw here was, it wasn't one complaint. It was that it was the same complaint time after time, and people didn't realize that they were adding to and piling on a case.
Exactly. And when we, you know, brought some of these people together this week to meet each other, they said, wow, you know, as hearing these stories with everybody in the room, they were remarkably similar. But if you're just that one person trying to fight it on your own, it can be pretty hard. You get into the he said, she said. But all of a sudden, if you have 100 or 200 people telling the exact same story over and over and over again, that is very telling.
What industry do you pay the most attention to, or has the most potential for fraud or things like that in this day and age?
You know, there's a number of them. We get a lot of phone calls. We get over 500 phone calls a day from the public all over Minnesota reporting things. Certainly within this area, these cable TV and internet packages, there's some pretty aggressive sales practices going on where People are, you know, promising these low ball rates, and then in this case with CenturyLink not delivering them. It makes it really hard for the consumer to shop around when companies misquote and you can't get a straight answer about prices. We also see, you know, a lot of complaints just with the internet right now, and you know, it has done a lot to you know, make research available and kids doing their homework and things like that. But with the internet being so easy to use as a fraud mechanism, we see fake emails sent out for pennies on the dollar. You can send a million emails to people, and if even a few people take the bite, they've made a lot of money. So that's been a kind of a brave new world here for us.
Is sending something out via internet, is it the same standard now as mail fraud that goes across, if you use the Postal Service to go across lines? Or I don't even know what the law is on that.
Pretty much. I mean, it is. Yeah, using the internet is, you know, similar in that regard. If you use a means of, you know, telecommunication or internet to cross state lines, and the federal government can get involved and have some enhanced penalties. But there are just a whole bunch of scams going on the internet right now. I mean, ranging from fake tech scams where they will actually take control of your computer and then lock your computer up and tell you you have to enter your credit card to pay us to unlock, you know, your computer, and then you pay them money and they, you know, take your money, and then they actually download malware on your computer. And so things like that are, it's kind of just changing fraud that we've seen in the last several years because of the nature of the internet.
Is that what scares you the most, is trying, it just seems like the bad guys spend so much time staying three steps ahead of us that we're always catching up to. But is it specific to cyberspace and everything else right now?
Cyber is a hot area. I mean, it used to be fraud was sort of door-to-door, and then it became over the telephone. The internet is certainly the broader area where it's disseminated, but there's a lot of phone scams going on right now as well. And, you know, with technology there too, they place telephone calls using internet technology, and they may be, they can make caller ID look like they're local, but they might be in Belize or, you know, India or wherever, placing these calls. And so it can be hard to certainly catch them. And that's where, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and trying to, we try to get the word out. We have probably 150 publications that people can get free of charge from our office, so that we keep the public up to date on the latest scams and how to stay ahead of some of these things.
Somebody asked me when they knew that I was going to interview you today, they said, how about this one? I made an investment and I still got my money in the investment, and for all I can tell, it's still there. Mm-hmm. And I've never thought that it was a Ponzi scheme, but this investment has been sitting there for years and years, and all we keep hearing is it's getting close, we're doing okay, we got more research, this and that. Red flag, or how do you go about trying to decide whether or not your money's in a safe place? He says, now that I think about it, the only thing I've got is a piece of paper that says I've got the value of it. There's nothing to cash in right now because we're waiting to see if it comes to fruition. Should he be concerned or not?
I would be concerned about something like that. Yeah, if it's just a piece of paper and they're saying it's coming, and it hasn't yet come due, I would certainly be concerned. There's a lot of investment scams going on as well, and, you know, ranging from promissory notes or IOUs. Red flag is, you know, it's the old, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And, you know, if the interest rate that is being offered is higher than what's commercially or reasonably available, that's almost always a red flag too. You know, if they're promising, you know, 12%, 18% interest, probably a red flag that there's a problem.
Is the demographic usually older in age that you worry about the most?
That's very common. I mean, Jesse James, the bank robber, was once asked, why do you rob banks? He said, well, that's where the money is.
It ain't hard.
Right. And so with senior citizens, it may not be a lot of money always, but there is some money, more than a 22-year-old. And so a lot of the fraud is targeted for sure against older Minnesotans, but not exclusively at all, as we've seen with the CenturyLink case. It's all over the map, ranging from young mom wanting her kid to do her homework to, you know, people in their 80s just wanting basic cable television service.
You know, we saw the Madoff scandal, of course. At that same time when the economy went bad, did you prosecute a lot of similar cases on a smaller scale in Minnesota?
You know, yeah, absolutely. There, we did. I mean, there during the recession, there were so many new scams that came up that didn't even exist, you know, 5 years before that. And Minnesota certainly had its share of them. And just during the bad economy, we saw scams where people would try to, you know, offer to help save people's homes, you know, from foreclosure or, you know, help them with credit card debt. And now we're seeing a lot of it with student loan debt because, you know, there are 40 million Americans owe money on student loans, and about $1.3 trillion is owed. And Minnesota has about the fifth highest student loan debt in the country. And there are these scammers now that will say, you know, pay me $2,000. I can help get you a refinancing package on your student loans. And, of course, they don't and they can't, but are targeting people who, you know, are, you know, interested in trying to work out their student loan situation.
Sure, and they're looking for the naive, the young, the old, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere in between that.
Yeah, and every good scam, you know, I always say it has to have a grain of truth and people have to want to believe it, and that's kind of the makeup of scams. You know, there's something that rings true about it, and, you know, you want to believe it, and scam artists, unfortunately, take advantage of that.
Lori, keep finding the bad guys for us. We appreciate your time today.
Will do. Thank you, Mike. Good talking to you.
You too. Lori Swanson, Attorney General, and she has had one busy week. Is it the human nature, people, the DNA, that we're always going to have scammers out there? Could we ever curb that? Mike Max, the afternoon ride home. Stay with us.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Think about the power you have if you can do one thing, control your mind. That's it. Control your mind and your thoughts. Think about that. If you can stay calm when everyone around you is in a panic, think of how powerful that is to know that the worst of times will not send you into a spiral. We're going to visit with Katrina Radke about just that. She's a sports psychologist. It's the same principles they use in sports that you might be able to apply to your own life. Taking control of your mind and being empowered by it, next on the afternoon ride home. Sports is about the mind. Performance is about the mind. After you've mastered whatever the task is at hand, the question is, how do you get your mind to peak performance? I find this to be one of the most fascinating studies that we go through. The DNA of people that know that they've got something that they can unlock, and from time to time they perform at a level that they tells them, it almost teases them, that they can do things that they did not imagine. But then when they try to recreate it the next week, they fall short. It's really a fun study. Katrina Radke is a sports psychologist, therapist. She joins us now to talk about just that and how it applies to daily lives, not just sports. Katrina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here.
I find this, I've always found, I'm a psychology minor and I played sports throughout college and beyond. And so I find this always to be a fascinating study because it's like we know that if we can get control of our minds, our emotions, our thoughts, we can do great things.
I totally agree. And yet sometimes for some people it can be a monkey mind too. So
yes.
The question is,
how are there times though, I mean, do we set the expectations too high because we treat our mind differently than our muscles maybe, and there are times when our mind is sore like our muscles are, and yet we expect to be able to recreate or go to a place where maybe we just can't get to?
Yeah, so I find it really interesting because I have seen working with a lot of clients all over the country as well as the world is that when we get too attached to an outcome, it's easy to get lost. We try too hard, and then we get lost in that place, and our mind might start talking too much to us. Whereas muscle testing and applied kinesiology shows that when you get your mind quiet and you're in a place of belief in what's possible, the body obeys the mind. It's incredible.
How do you get there?
How do you get there? Well,
here it is, the $100 million question. Now let's go back, though, a second here, Katrina, because
sure. It's
not about one day being able to say, I can go out and throw 90 miles an hour. If I'm a pitcher in baseball, whatever it is, first you have to have repetition practice. There are things you have to do that merits it, that proves that you are capable of getting there. And that's when you got to sit down and try to get to that quiet mind to get to peak performance. So it's not just about the mind. First you have to, through repetition practice, all those things, through training, you have to know that you can get there before you can get there.
Correct. I totally agree with you 100%. It's consistency, daily
consistency.
And I, you know, it's funny, sometimes people think, oh, if I just do this, I'll do a ton of it today. Well, you know what? You're better off doing a tiny bit of it today, tomorrow, the next day. It's like taking those tiny steps up to the top of the mountain. And when we do those little steps, it leads to the next greater thing. And then, you know, we have a huge, lofty goal. Like, you know, I know when I was little in third grade and had a dream of being an Olympian, I was like, oh my gosh, some people might think that's crazy. And yet little steps get you there.
Okay.
And having that dream, having that, you know, desire and dedication towards it.
So for you, it starts with the dream. Okay.
Now, yes. Well,
there's another part that I think is just paramount to parents out there that we have to remind ourselves of and participants. And that is you have to trust the process.
Absolutely.
And that is hard to do sometimes because you want to go from A to Z. Instead of going small increments every day, create confidence. You take it from there because you've been down this road.
Well, one thing I want to say to parents who might be listening too is that sometimes as parents, we really, really want it for our Johnny or Susie. And the reality is if it's not their wish, it will be hard for them to do. And so I think it's really important to allow the kid to decide, to help make a choice on what they really want to pursue and what they really love so that they can own it. Because if they don't own it, it's going to be a very difficult path. And so a firm believer in having somebody really love what they're doing, and because it's going to be days of struggle, no matter who it is. I mean, I know for me, some days when I didn't want to get to 5:30 in the morning, I still would have this vision of what I wanted, and I'd get up and go. And it's kind of like anybody who has a big dream in the business world or whatever it might be, is having that bigger aha to keep you moving on the days where you're doubting yourself or wondering if it's all worth it. And so I'm a firm believer, if somebody has a vision and they can just dream big enough, and that's the funny thing is, Mike, is I'm sure you've seen this too, where some people just are almost afraid to dream because they're afraid, oh my gosh, am I really able to do that too? And let me tell you, one thing I learned at a young age, when I first met some of my, you know, major like idols, was like, wow, they're human. They're like me. They put their pants on one leg at a time.
Yeah, and they worry about the same things I worry about.
Yes, exactly. And I think the biggest difference is they know how to refocus faster. And they know how to dare to go through the tunnel of darkness into the light rather than actually being afraid of the failure that might come with it. And so it's having the courage and the trust and the surrender piece to be in that space, even though we don't totally know the outcome.
Okay, this is a really good question. I think that I don't think people take enough time, and I know you've sorted through it, is should you practice adversity? Meaning, I know one football coach, and when he told me this, I thought, that's awesome. He says, we try to go through, okay, first play from scrimmage, we just got sacked for 10-yard loss. Now it's instead of second and 5, it's second and 20. Bring it on. That's adversity. Let's rally around that. And they tried to rehearse adverse conditions and then how they would react to them. Now, some would say that's negative thinking and you need to be positive. But do you need to play out negative and adverse situations? Does that help you?
Oh, I think that's 100% correct. Yeah, I would definitely do that because I know for me in my swimming background, I did that. And then, of course, in football or soccer or some of the sports where you have a lot of strategy going on amongst the field, you need to be mindful of what could happen with this competitor. That's why, obviously, quarterbacks in football study tapes over and over and over again. I mean, I don't know football well, but that's what I understand from a friend of mine. And he basically said that, you know, he memorized plays, all the possibilities, just in case that this scenario might show up.
How about something singular like swimming where it is down and back and down and back? Different kind of training because you don't have the same variables, the same number of people. Is it a different mental training?
I think it's easier.
because you know the lane, you know what lane you're in, so to speak, huh?
Yeah, there's nobody coming into your lane. You are totally in control of your outcome. And you have a clock, you, and then yes, they're racing up against other people, but they don't come in your lane and make you change what you do. If you're too distracted by them, you might get altered. But if you can stay focused and do your own race, you'll be just awesome.
Katrina Radke is our guest sports psychologist. And so now we get back to in business application and life application. And it seems like we go through this and we always go full circle. It comes back to focusing on what you can control and trying to understand what it is you can control.
Yeah, so I like to draw a big circle. Like, you know, me is a big circle and circumstances a small circle. And sometimes when we become victim of circumstances, we make ourselves the small one and then circumstances the big one. And it's important to see that, yes, there'll be things that happen in our lives that we may not like, but the more we can change how we respond to them, the easier it'll be. For example, if all of a sudden a huge wave's coming in and knocks us over, well, first time we might not be able to stand up, but maybe the next time it comes, we'll be more ready for it. Or it becomes smaller, we become less reactive to it. We're able to be grounded enough in ourselves to know how to respond to that. And so that's a big piece of learning how to, you know, not control the mind, but be able to focus the energy that goes on in our voices in the head to be able to calm it down enough to be able to become more of the instrument, if you will, versus the one that's doing it.
How do you?
Go ahead. Yeah, I think the biggest thing in sports is when people reach a peak performance level or get in that flow or zone, a big piece of it is they see that they've trained daily to get to the train, you know how to do it, but they know how to let go enough to be in the zone, let the mind go quiet, the body take over, or it could be in a business meeting, let the things flow rather than trying to control everything. That's when the best results happen.
How do you know when it's time to quit? In other words, you've played your cards, you had the dream, whatever the dream is, and you're not quite sure whether or not it takes more effort or whether or not it's now time to divert my energy to another place.
Well, my belief is, and this is what's happening, interestingly, more in the Olympic world in particular, is that there's a lot more money involved for people to stay in sports. And so people do stay on longer, and it's harder to know when to retire, for example. But the interesting thing, if people really pay attention and listen to their inner guidance, I do believe that there's answers there for each person. It might be different for each person. Somebody may be able to, you know, reach their dream and be done. Somebody else feels like, you know, I want to continue on because I love it so much. I think it varies based on each person, but I think it's important for each person to be honest with themselves about why they're continuing to do it if they do it. Because I have seen some people stay on because they don't know what else to go to.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And I think it's important to be okay with that empty space in between completing your career and not knowing exactly what you're going to do next, but knowing you have a lot of characteristics you've developed through whatever you've done that you can use moving forward, and to having trust and faith in that process.
There, you know, when you get into parenting skills as well, and trying to bring your kids along in a performance base, whether it's sports or theater, band, whatever. I heard Jack Nicklaus say one time, they said, when should you bring your kid golfing and get serious about it? He said, well, when you bring him golfing and he quits chasing frogs, then he's ready to play golf. But if he's still chasing frogs, then he's not that interested in playing golf. I get what he's saying. But when you have, when you're the parent of a child and you see in them ability, and you see that between them and the goal that they want to reach is hard work, and you're trying to gently push them in that direction and let them know that you cannot get where you want to go without doing more, and yet the parent doesn't want to be the pushy parent that turns the kid off, is there a right way?
I don't think the right way, because every kid has a different temperament and every parent has a different way of responding to different kids. So I am a parent of two kids myself. I have an 11-year-old daughter and a 10-year-old son, and they're very different in how they work and how they process information. And so I have to motivate them in very different ways. And it's very interesting that you asked that question, because I think a lot of parents are always trying to do what they thought worked for them, but sometimes their kid may not be that same way, and so it's important to honor the way the kid processes.
Wish you had told me that last week.
How old are your kids?
14 and 10.
Oh, yeah, similar to mine, It's a wonderful thing being a gift being a parent, isn't it?
Yeah, because just what when you're saying, I'm going, I know what worked for me. But then I never thought about, well, will that work for them, you know?
Yes.
And somebody else will say to you, it doesn't matter if you push or not, because unless they want it, none of that matters, true or not.
Well, I'm a believer that they have to have some desire. And yet there's some people who are so doubtful about what they can do.
Sure, they just don't know.
They do need to be encouraged. Yeah, they don't know. And they don't quite believe. And so, ironically, there's some late bloomers who show up who may just stay involved in something for a while, and then they go, wow, I'm actually quite good at this, or I really like it. And then they pursue it and become really great at it, or they at least reach what they want to do within that world. So, you know, some people are not meant to be athletes. Maybe they go there for the social side of things, or maybe just for exercise, or, you know, a 4'5" guy is not going to probably become a basketball NBA player in the a pro level. And that's all okay. So it's, honoring what you are, being in that space, and then seeing, hey, what works for me, what I love. I go back to the, gosh, if you love it, you're going to do okay. You know, you're going to be in a place where you won't give up on yourself.
Yeah, and you're right, because even if it's hard, you won't give up. And one of the easiest things to do in life and in work is to go, well, this isn't working out, I'm going to quit. And then you move over to something else. And guess what? A year later, you're still you and your attitude hasn't changed. So you quit again. And I see people that have careers like that, you know, and you almost feel sorry for them because they kept thinking the problem was the vocation that they chose and they never looked inside.
Yeah. You're right. I told yes. Amen. Amen to all that.
Yeah.
If we all as people, imagine like being in third grade and you go to a classroom in school and you actually were taught to listen inside, get quiet, learn how to and calm the voices down, the monkey mind, I call it, and being in a place where you start going, oh, I have some other things coming up that kind of interest me, that excite me. And imagine if you had a magic wand, you're guaranteed every wish, and what would you ask for? Who would you become? What would you do? What would you have? And all of a sudden more and more excitement comes to you because you're going, oh, that'd be pretty cool. I like that too. Especially if you're granted it all to have happened with no failure, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that helps people get clear. And from clarity, all this other stuff can come. Because, yes, even no matter what level anybody in the world has been, they've had their moments of doubt. And I've seen it at the world-class level of my sports and stuff is people all have doubts. All of us do. The key is, can we overcome them? Can we look beyond that? Can we see that the focus that's, you know, if we focus on the purpose that's greater than ourselves, it comes easily for us.
Don't you think that people would be amazed if they found out who you were working with and that some of those people lacked confidence. Don't you think that the public would be shocked because we see people and we think, my God, they've got it all, and you don't realize how the inner voices affect them?
Yes, yes. And sometimes I've seen at the world-class level in whatever sport it is, or even pros, sometimes people have gotten there because they've needed so much attention or love that they got from the sport. And really underneath, they're quite fragile. There's a mix of that. You know, that somebody can be really confident, and some of those people are actually more fragile than you'd expect.
Yeah, and they hear everything, and they're constantly having to overcome whatever it is that they think they're not. Is a lot of that for you trying to find out how they perceive themselves? Is that where you start?
Well, I usually start with just trying to get in touch with what motivates them, how they think, what are their belief systems, how can they actually decrease their ego and get detached from it and be able to look at the world differently. Because I think if they can stay with a more open mind and take action from there, it changes how they view everything they do.
Mm. It all starts inside, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes.
Do you agree with me that talent is really overrated? Because I see people, I can't believe how many people that I, especially when I watch U Sports, and I say, there's a whole bunch of you that are about the same. Now, there's only going to be five left of you starting in basketball by the time you're seniors in high school or whatever it is. But it's going to be the five. It's not going to be the five that have – you're going to think it's because of talent, but it's just going to be the five that make the decision to work hard. I don't think people give that enough credit sometimes.
Yes. Well, here's the funny thing. I know in my experiences is many times you see all these young athletes, maybe up to puberty, who are amazing. And come puberty, people grow. Everybody's more at an equal level physically. All of a sudden, a lot of those kids who were amazing at young ages are no longer, because some of the people who may have not been so-called more talented, they actually worked harder or they persevered more, that allowed them to see the value of that dedication that allows them to get further ahead long-term.
And they trusted the process.
Yes, and they trust the process.
It's funny to me because I'll see a lot of working with a lot of guys that and some played sports in high school and college and some didn't, and they're all coaching now, U Sports, et cetera. And the guys that played sports are actually not as hard on their kids in many cases as the guys that didn't. And the reason is they understand improvement, and they understand when a kid's moving in the right direction, even if they're not seeing results.
Yes.
And I think that is so important. Just because today you didn't get any hits doesn't mean you're not a good hitter, and the guy that played the sport can see that.
Yes, like if you're a baseball player and you're missing the ball today, maybe you change your swing and you're trying something
new.
Yeah,
but you might be just a fraction off, and you think you've got a big – but you don't have a big problem, and the guy that's played it can see that.
Yes, the perspective's different.
Well, Katrina, I could talk to you all day about it, but thank you for giving us some time.
I appreciate it, Mike.
You bet. Katrina Radke, sports psychologist and quite an accomplished athlete herself, taking us through it. Amelia Santinello is quite an athlete in her day, and she's become quite a performer, primetime performer. I'll visit with her in the 4 o'clock hour. Yes, I will. The time is 3:49. That's the Wixon Jewelers time. To see an incredible selection of Rolex watches for men and women, visit Wixon Jewelers in Bloomington, your official Rolex jeweler. Welcome back. Mike Max in for the afternoon ride home. Amelia Santinello in the 4 o'clock hour. Ron Sherrill will join us a bit later. He's going fishing with some members of the Minnesota Wild. Head coach Bruce Boudreau this weekend. Don't worry, I've already warned them. That's coming up at 5:35. Then a gentleman that's been overseeing and helping oversee the Ramsey County Fair for 51 years. What has he seen? Have the Ferris wheels changed that much? We'll visit about that. We had the poll yesterday, should you be afforded sick days for mental health days, quote-unquote mental health days, when you just don't feel like you're there emotionally or mentally? We'll bring you the results of that at 4:20. Let me tell you why I am somewhat opposed to mental health days. What's a mental health day? What's the definition of stressed out? I want you to look at sports figures again. And it always comes back to sports. I know you're going to say, Max, you're an idiot, blah, blah, blah. There's coaches that get their brains beat in every week, their team does. Do you think they ever take a day and say, well, I'm not going to go to practice today because I am really stressed out? They are stressed out. They are taxed. They are beyond, they can't get to a good place. They're not sleeping at night. But do they ever call in sick and say, I need a mental health day? No, because they owe it to their team and to themselves to push through that. And that's why I have a trouble with that phrase, mental health. What the hell is a mental health day? Who decides whether or not you need that break? I get it. Everybody gets emotionally taxed. The question is, who can work through that? And who can, when the chips are down, step up again and say, deal me another hand? Who can do that? I don't think you do yourself a lot of good by saying, I'm stressed out, I need a day off. We all get stressed out and need days off. But if you push through it, you prove to yourself that you're stronger and tougher than you thought you were. That's what I believe. You can text me anytime at 81807. 81807, Mike Max for the afternoon ride home.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.